Hey, Valley fans, you're listening to the March to the Arch podcast. Is your team going to win? Make some noise!
This is the March to the Arch podcast, your place for Missouri Valley Conference news, talk, and takes.
Welcome to the March to the Arch podcast in this 2023-2024 Missouri Valley Conference season. It's the wrap-up episode. All of the Missouri MVC teams are done. We've had the CBI, the NIT, Indiana State lost in the championship game at Hinkle Fieldhouse, and we can't wait to talk about it. But before we get into kind of this wrap-up show, how are we doing today, Baker?
Doing great, Vance. We were just talking a little bit before we came on. As much as I love this podcast and I love all our listeners, and I love watching Missouri Valley Conference basketball, it'll be nice to kind of take a little break from this podcast. I actually was looking on Twitter earlier. I don't know if you saw this, because we sent a tweet out asking questions, which we'll get into in this episode. I said we were going to take a 3 months off, so I sent your questions in. One person said something about being off for 3 months, and I was like, you know, unless you guys are – buckling in for Knicks and Avalanche podcast for the next 3 months, I don't really think it'll be that entertaining for you, Vance.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's just not a lot to talk about, and we'll get into the portal. We'll get into coaching carousel season. But yeah, it's kind of just until you understand what your roster is going to be, it's all speculation. And at this time, the Wild West is the NCAA offseason.
Yeah, well, Valley fans, don't worry here. We are going to speculate a ton on this episode. We have every single team covered when it comes to the transfer portal, which we're going to break down who's leaving, who's actually coming on to some of the teams. So a lot of fun discussion, as well as the games that just happened, which one of those games, Vance, the NIT championship, you and I were lucky to be in attendance.
I mean, talk about what a awesome experience we got to have. And we originally were supposed to go Tuesday for the first round or for the final four, but ultimately got to go for the championship game. But maybe Baker, take us through how did the road open up for us to go to the championship game?
Yeah, so this was something that we were kind of kicking around for a couple weeks as Indiana going on their run, even Bradley had they gone on a run. And we were kind of like, you know, do we go to the NIT? It's only a couple hours away from where we live. Let's kind of wait and see what happens. So take you guys back to when Indiana State beat Cincinnati to punch their ticket to Hinkle Fieldhouse for the NIT Final Four and Championship. At that time, I was like, all right, you know what? We're going to submit the credentials because we hadn't gone to any of the games. So we weren't really sure if we get credentialed or not because we hadn't been covering the tournament, but it was like, you know what? We'll send them in. We'll see what happens. Got an email back that on the weekend I sent Vance a message. I was like, okay, we got in. Now we actually do have to make a decision, which it wasn't going to be a hard decision because we both wanted to go to Hinkle, by the way. But based on our schedule the week of the NIT Final Four and Championship, like a lot had to go right. So like Tuesday was out for us because we just, a couple conflicts could not happen on Tuesday. But Thursday was a day that might open up. But like to take you guys into the situation in my head, everything had to go correct. So like originally we had to get credentialed. Then on that Thursday, I coach an AU travel baseball team, and we had a practice scheduled for that Thursday. And on that Thursday, we had rain all the way up until then. So I'm like, all right, there's a real good chance we're going to cancel this practice. And we got to Thursday morning, and I was driving my kid to school. I was like, all right, rain's coming down. Practice is canceled. I sent out a message. All my parents, practice is canceled. So then the next thing was I had to have somebody to watch my kids. I had to have someone because my wife gets off later than I do and I work from home. So I had to wait to find out what her schedule was like. It just so happened her last appointment of the day canceled. So she was then able to come home early. So then we were able to leave for Indianapolis earlier. And then like on top of all that, my mom, who actually watches my kids on Thursdays, she had to stay just long enough for my wife to get home, so that it would be kind of a transition trade-off. So we were able to leave for Indianapolis. And then with all that having to work out, then I had to text you or send you a message. I think I called you Thursday morning and it was like, okay, Vance, can you go? Like everything worked out for us. And then I'll kick it to you, Vance. Like you had to kind of coordinate on things on your side to make this the perfect storm.
It was. And honestly, some of this was I was able to do a little bit of due diligence because I would say my life with a 6 month old is not as hectic in coordination with as you with activities and two kids to juggle, because laid a little groundwork early on in the week of Tuesday ended up being a no-go just due to some coverage, and both of us had just could not make Tuesday work. And whereas my wife is like, actually Thursday is way better, so we're good to go. If you get the call, you know, let's just obviously check in before you leave for Indianapolis. But all roads were green for us to go. So that Thursday, I actually got your call, and I was like, I think I responded, I was like, you ready to go to Indianapolis? And you're like, how'd you know that's what I was calling about? I was like, because it's Thursday morning at like 8:30. I'm assuming that's why you're calling me right now. You're not calling to say, hey.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's exactly how you answer that. But we'll get into it when we get to the Indiana State NIT run. But I'll tease it like this. Two very happy podcasters that they made the trip, because it was definitely worth it.
Absolutely.
But Vance, do you want to get into some basketball?
Let's get into some hoops of this past week. All right, Valley fans, let's get to the lone representative of the Missouri Valley Conference playing in the NCAA tournament. I know we're kind of going back in time here, but Drake was a 10 seed. They played the 7-seeded Washington State Cougars in the East region in the first round, and bowed out in the first round, losing 66-61. Atten Wright led the Bulldogs with 20 points. Tucker DeVries added 14, and Darnell Brody added 13 points. For the Washington State Cougars, it was Jones who added 20 points, and Wells had 17. Baker, not the outcome we thought Drake would have. I'd say a lot of the country thought Drake, this was the 7-10 upset that would happen. I know the betting public, actually, Drake was favored in this game by 3-ish points. Not the day the Valley wanted with the Drake Bulldogs and against Washington State.
Yeah, this was a bummer, especially because we had to stay up so late to watch it, Vance. And that was another piece of the pie. But a really heartbreaking loss for the Valley and the Drake Bulldogs and their fans. Losing by 5 in this game. Just to kind of give you guys a recap from this game. Really competitive game in the first half. I think Drake was fortunate to be down by 4 at halftime. And I think I even texted in one of our groups. I was like, they're going to have to establish Brody right away, which they did at the beginning of the second half. Drake went on a run, got that lead all the way up to 8 points. And that's the kiss of death, apparently, for the Drake Bulldogs, having an 8-point lead in the first round with, you know, about 7 or 8 minutes to go in the game. And from there, they just kind of turtled. no really other way to put it than they choked. It's not a fun thing. Nobody wants that to happen at all, but there was just a lot that went into the game that guys just didn't step up. I know late in the game, down by 2, Kevin Overton dribbles the ball off his leg. Like, when does he ever do that? The bizarre Tucker DeVries play at the end of the game, whether it's him coming out for an offensive defense possession type thing, which I was befuddled by. I don't understand why you could do that and risk having an offensive possession with him not on the floor, especially after Brody had fouled out. But then his indecisiveness and basically giving the ball up instantly like it's hot potato when he got the ball late in the game. Really disappointing way for him to finish his Valley career. Represent the league in March Madness. And that's the second time it wasn't the 3-point game that he had the first time playing Miami, but definitely left a bad taste in your mouth for Tucker DeVries. Second not so good performance in the NCAA tournament, Vance. And overall, it was disappointing, but hats off to Washington State because they're a hard team to beat and they played really hard and deserved to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to belabor this game. One, it's been multiple weeks since it's happened, but it kind of just comes, and this whole team is totally different, and none of the DeVries are at Drake right now. But
6 out of 14 from the free throw line, by the way, for Drake in this game.
Yeah, and just
that's huge.
For me, great season, 28-7. But however, it just kind of back to back can't get over the NCAA hump. For them, and you know, at the end of the day, it does not matter. They are now West Virginia Mountaineers, the DeVries family, and we'll see where the rest of the team goes. But ultimately, just not the NCAA tournament the Missouri Valley wanted, more the Missouri Valley needed from a units perspective. And just all in all, a bummer of a game that late of just seeing them just, just lose it and not in a fun fashion, especially whenever you're up eight with what, under 10, you're like, you're feeling pretty good here.
It was about 6 or 7 minutes left.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I got it for the Drake fans. That's that. I know we know quite a few of them from doing this podcast and ones that made the trip over to Omaha. So gutted for them, especially after having such a high of playing so well to beat Indiana State in that championship game at Arch Madness. But, having it in the palm of their hands and just, like I said, the last 6 minutes, it's just that wasn't the Drake we saw all year. It just wasn't. The killer instinct that Tucker DeVries normally has just wasn't there in that game. I don't know if there was something bothering him or what, but it is what it is, Vance. Disappointing end of the season for an NCAA tournament perspective for the Valley.
Yep. Well, let's go to the second tournament after that one, where we had two representatives, Bradley and Indiana State, in the NIT. Remember, the first few rounds are on campus sites, and Indiana State hosted SMU at the Holman Center, and this was on back on March 20th, as we're recording here on April 8th. They took care of business against SMU 101-92. In the loss, Harris for SMU had 19 points, and Jason Kent 35 points, 9 rebounds in this first game against SMU.
Yeah, huge game for Jason Kent in this one. Indiana State was down quite a bit in this game for long stretches of time in this game. I think even in the second half, they were down by about 14 points at one point, but then just went on a run, flipped the script of the game. That crowd was electric, as they were for all three NIT games, and Indiana State was able to cruise into that triple-digit offensive performance and a 9-point victory.
All right, and then the second representative, and this was the game that I would say all MVC fans had circled. Bradley hosted Loyola, motorcycles and all, at the Peoria Civic Center, where the Bradley Braves at Carver Arena knocked off the Ramblers 74-62. Brayden Norris, which Valley fans know, had 17 points, and Malavi Leones in the win had 14 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks in his double-double.
Yeah, Malavi was special in this game. Bradley jumped out really quickly on Loyola and were just cruising all the way through the first half. And then the second half, it felt like they took their foot off the gas, and Loyola just started chipping away, really led by Brayden Norris. Hit a couple of threes. Betsy player, for those of you who remember him in the Valley, all the respect in the world for Brayden. He's a good player. And he kind of willed them back into the game throughout the second half. And I think they got it within 2 points late in the second half. And but from there, that was the point where Bradley was like, okay, turned back on, walked away with a victory. Good win for Bradley. Good win for Valley fans who, an old foe from the Valley past, Loyola, walked into Carver Arena and couldn't get the win. So really cool to see that Bradley group get another win and a chance to play another game.
Loyola 0-2 against Missouri Valley this year, if anyone's looking at their schedules.
Yes, sir. UIC, represent.
Yep. And so we'll go to the next game for Bradley, where they went to Cincinnati on the road, and ultimately their season came to an end, going 23-12 on the season, losing to Cincinnati 74-57. Malavi also had a good game, 16 points, 6 rebounds in the loss.
You know, I don't think Cincinnati's 17 points better than Bradley, but they've just played better on this day, and I think it was a pretty competitive game on paper. Bradley just didn't shoot the ball well in this one at all. Picked a bad time for one of their worst shooting performances. And Cincinnati really just controlled things from tip. This was really their game all the way through the first half and into the second half. Never let Bradley get into this game. Kind of kept him at arm's length throughout the second half. I think they might have got it back to bound down to about 6 at one point in the second half. And that was the closest they got. This was Cincinnati kind of coast-to-coast win. But you know what? Good win, or good job by Bradley. They at least went to the NIT. They got a victory. Didn't embarrass themselves by any stretch. Went on the road to Cincinnati and lost. I mean, there's no shame in that. So tough loss for the Braves, though.
The next night, Indiana State hosted the Minnesota Golden Gophers and won 76-64, a game in which I don't believe Indiana State was not leading in this game, or they were always leading in this game, scoring 23 points. Ryan Conwell led the way for the Sycamores, and then four of the five starters were in double-digit scoring figures. Just this was a route that Indiana State needed. They had a 10-point halftime lead and ultimately won the second half.
Coast to coast win for the Sycamores in this one, where they were just there's better than Minnesota.
Better.
I mean, there's not much more to put into this game. This game, you were never worried that they were going to lose this game. Again, I think Minnesota got within like five, maybe at one point, but this game wasn't really that competitive. Indiana State was just a better team. Took care of business at home over a Big Ten team in Minnesota.
All right, we'll go to the Holman Sitter on Tuesday, March 26th, where Indiana State hosted Cincinnati. Once again, this could have been Indiana State-Bradley, and that would have been electric in the NIT. But Indiana State wins 85-81. Robbie Avila led the way with 22 points in this game.
Yeah, this was an awesome basketball game, Vance. You definitely got your money's worth if you went to this one. Really back and forth. Cincinnati kind of controlled things kind of into halftime and into the second half a little bit there. I think they led by about 7 points at one point. But in true Indiana State fashion in the second half, they would go on that big run that they're kind of known for. And once they kind of took the game back over, they never really let Cincinnati back into it. There was a time where they were tied with a couple of minutes to go, but huge three by Robbie Avila really late in this game was the deciding factor and was why Indiana State was able to punch their ticket to Hinkle Fieldhouse for the Final Four of the NIT.
Absolutely, and there's a huge stretch late in the game, the last 3 minutes, except for kind of a garbage time three-pointer at the buzzer. Indiana State held Cincinnati scoreless for the last 3 minutes and, like you said, just solidified it. And on to Hinkle Fieldhouse, where the Final Four matchup was set at Hinkle Fieldhouse, and the four Final Four teams were Utah versus Indiana State and then Georgia versus Seton Hall, all at Hinkle Fieldhouse starting Tuesday, April 2nd. In the game that we care about, Indiana State won 100-90 against the Utah Utes. Leading the way was Robbie Avila in a double-double with 26 points, 10 rebounds.
Yeah, Ryan Conwell was also awesome in this game. This was a really good up-and-down game, really good, fun, competitive game, but this was Robbie Avila's game. This was the game. I think he was the best player on the floor, Vance, in my opinion. He outplayed a really good post that Utah has. Carlson's had a really good year for them, and Avila was just way better than him in this one. Game was pretty competitive all the way through until about the second half, where Indiana State kind of went on a run to add a little bit of separation. And once they got it up to about 7 or 8 points, they really never let Utah climb back in it. Smith was really good for them. He tried everything he could to kind of get them back in this game, but it was championship bound Indiana State Sycamores.
Absolutely. And they were on their way to face the Seton Hall Pirates of New Jersey on the championship night, April 4th, Thursday. Baker and I were in attendance. Baker, we said this multiple times, top five, top 10. Where does this game and atmosphere rank in your just personal sports experience?
It's 100% a top five sports memory. There's a few other ones that come to mind. I was at a outdoor NHL game where at Air Force Academy when the Avalanche went out there, which was crazy. I also saw, this is one that so many people are probably not going to really care about. I saw Fedor Emelianenko fight in the in a strike force fight once, and the crowd was insane for him. So anyone who's watched MMA, this was at like the height of his popularity. But it compares to that. That's how good of a crowd this was. I don't think I can think of another basketball game that the crowd has ever been like this. And we were even talking about it, Vance. Both of us wanted to go to Hinkle Fieldhouse sometime in our lives. This was a bucket list item for both of us. I think we also got spoiled going during this because it was like the perfect storm. It was like a team we cared about where they their crowd showed up and then some, and it was incredibly loud and just a crazy atmosphere. And friend of the show, Tony, put it as like, it kind of felt like a high level high school basketball game. Cause you know, you go into small gyms and it's so loud. We'll kind of compare that as this is kind of a weird building, but it was still so loud on every play. The crowd was into that game so much. Like there were no lulls really during that game at all, Vance.
I agree. It's definitely top five for me. I'd say the Arch Madness semifinals that were sold out are really up there for my basketball experience. Would be, that'd be what, 2006, the SIU-Bradley game. But ultimately, like this one is just up there with it as well. That, you know, to the point of we were driving home, and I don't think we really talked for the first like 5 or 10 minutes because it was just like overload. It was just so much going on that we were like, oh, it was so loud. The game was awesome, and it was just so much going on. You know, sensory overload. It's kind of how I describe it, because you know, unfortunately, you know, like no offense to any Bradley fans here, but if Bradley was in the championship game, I don't think it's the same experience. It's honestly all the stars had to align that. You know, Seton Hall maybe had a couple hundred fans, and the rest of the, I think Hinkle holds, you know, around 10,000. The rest of the fans were Indiana State fans. And it was just an unbelievable experience, unbelievable environment. One thing that if you weren't following on social media, they actually had some of the, from the movie Hoosiers, some of the actors back. So Jimmy Chitwood, the actor who played Jimmy Chitwood, was there. They had their Hickory Letterman jackets on. They put a measuring tape out. You know, I think it was like at one of the media timeouts. They really played it up. That was really cool. When we were walking into the stadium, they actually had the bus from the movie that Hickory took from game to game. If you remember that really small bus, the real life replica, or not replica, the real life one from the movie was outside the stadium as we were walking in. So we walked by that. So it wasn't just a basketball game. The NIT and obviously Hinkle did a great job of building an environment around that game and gave it the accolades that it deserved in hosting the NIT championship.
Yeah, no, I think you said it well. It was just kind of surreal to be there. And it was, I'm so lucky and fortunate that was my Hinkle Fieldhouse experience, and can look at it finally, even though they lost the game, which we'll get into, but like it was, gosh, I think they're part, and you did mention Seton Hall maybe had a couple hundred people there. Credit to them. That was a couple hundred people were really loud for what it was worth. Like every time they made a bucket, like you heard people. Because sometimes you go into a crowd where like it's a home game for somebody else. It really was a home game at Hinkle for Indiana State, but like those people were loud. So I give them a lot of credit, especially for traveling to hostile territory for them. But it was just, the fun part about it was, it's just like every basket mattered, every rebound mattered. Like you can tell that these Indiana State fans, like, and it was basketball fans, like these people knew the game. They were like, a steal would happen, and, or like a deflection even, and the crowd would get into it. Like little defensive plays like that. It was just, every play was so big and a big moment for them. Unfortunately, we have to get into the game. Vance, wasn't the trees night.
It was not, ultimately losing 79-77. Julian Larry was awesome in this game. He had 18 points along with Isaiah Swope's 19 points for the five starters in that double digit scoring. I mean, at the end of the day, they blew a, what, 7-point lead with a couple minutes to go. That's ultimately the story of this. And it was not the, for lack of a better term, Cinderella outcome, what we now know about Coach Schertz leaving. It just felt like this was Indiana State's NIT championship to win, and just not the close. It's not the closeout that we are accustomed to for Indiana State.
No, it wasn't. Unfortunately, they did have that 7-point lead with about 3 minutes to go. I think that when Ryan Conwell hit a three during that stretch, to put him up by four, and it was the first basket he scored all day, and that crowd just came unglued. And then the next time down the floor, Isaiah Swope hit one from almost the logo, and to put him up by seven, and the crowd was just feeling it. I think everybody was just like, okay, wow, they're actually going to do this. I give a lot of credit to Seton Hall, because they didn't just go away. Came back, played some really good defensive possessions against Indiana State, manufactured some tough baskets inside as Indiana State didn't really, you know, let them come back. They played well, but credit Seton Hall, made enough plays toward the end of the game. The final shot, there was it was kind of a weird coming off a slip screen from at the top. Isaiah Swope, he got a shot off that kind of got blocked or deflected, or maybe you can call he got fouled. I don't think anybody's ever gonna it was a borderline play, which you're never gonna call that foul, and I don't think anybody needs to be upset that they didn't blow the whistle on that one. And then Conwell kind of got the ball deflected out where he was almost at half court, but got a decent look at the end of the game. Didn't go down, and the Sycamores lost by two, but nothing to be ashamed of, Sycamores or Sycamore fans. That was an amazing run through the NIT, something that they should definitely be proud of, and as a Valley fan, I'm proud of them as well. And I think you sent out the tweet you sent out was, I think it was very poetic on the whole thing, as if this is the end for Josh Schertz, thank you. Because this was, as you got a picture of him walking off the floor for the final time as Sycamore head coach, which we will talk about here in a little bit. But it was such a good run, and it was so fun to watch this team. And I don't really, do you have anything else on this game, fans?
No, I mean, just it's another one of those of it's not the ending they wanted, but if you're an Indiana State fan, yes, you just lost your coach. Yes, you're going to lose likely a lot of your team, but this was a season you can't forget. And even if you attended this game, it was one for the ages. It wasn't the outcome, but if you just take a step back of where Indiana State basketball is today compared to where it was 5 years ago, you're playing at Hinkle Fieldhouse for an NIT championship. I think that you can sleep pretty well, you know, right now. And last one here, there were games that happened. There was the CIT that Evansville – CBR, thank you. The second time I've done it this episode. CBI that Evansville played in, they played two games in front of about 700 people. So ultimately they went 1-1. We're not going to talk anything about these games. I'm not going to pretend like I watched this game or was able to watch this game. But Evansville won the first one against Quinnipiac, winning 64-63. And then they lost the next one to Seattle. So it was ultimately games that the Aces were keeping that core together. And ultimately it was a good experience to get some more experience for the Purple Aces there. So yes, they represented the Missouri Valley in the CPI.
Yeah, got a win, went 1-1. Nothing to be ashamed of there. Tough loss to Seattle to kind of finish things off, but with the roster they had when they went down there, they didn't have their full complement of players. I mean, Quinn Murkaus didn't play in this, and he's never going to play against for Evansville, which we'll talk about soon. But you know, go 1-1, get your guys some more experience. Nothing wrong with that, Vance.
Absolutely. But hey, Baker, the 23-24 season is over. It was one for the ages. It's going to be an off season for the ages, which we'll get into here shortly. But ultimately, thank you to Drake for representing us in the NCAA tournament, and ultimately Bradley in Indiana State in the NIT, and Indiana State going all the way to the championship. You know, when you look back at this postseason, you know, the marquee game, Drake, you know, kind of leaves a little bit of a bitter taste, but in the grand scheme of things, the NIT run that Indiana State had is, I think, we're going to look back on relatively fondly as we see what the Indiana State team of future will be in a post-Schertz world. Coaching carousel is still moving, but some of the horses are in place. As of recording here on April 8th, four of the five coaching vacancies are filled, with a new one that came open earlier this week. So let's go down the list first before we get into all of them. Let's just name off all of the openings. Missouri State, Southern Illinois, UIC, Drake, and Indiana State will all be led by new coaches here in the 24-25 Missouri Valley Conference season. We'll kind of go chronologically here. We're not going to belabor how these jobs came open, because we talked about that in prior episodes. But ultimately, we start at Missouri State after the departure of Dana Ford. The Bears are going and bringing back Hanzo Martin. Hanzo Martin has previously coached at Missouri State after playing at
Purdue. And in his first stint at MSU, he had three seasons. He won the CIT in 09-10 season and then won the regular season Missouri Valley Conference Championship in 2010 and 11. So ultimately, after that, he departed for Tennessee and ultimately went to Cal and Mizzou. So essentially, Missouri Valley having two coaches now that are running it back for the second time at the same school. I'm obviously referring to Steve Prohm at Murray State, who had previously held that same job. So, Hanzo, back in Springfield, Missouri, Baker.
Yeah, I like this hire. I think it's a good risk to bring him back, someone who's proven to be successful in the Missouri Valley Conference. He turned around Missouri State and was really, you know, had a nice couple of year run there in Springfield. Could be a little bit risky. He's the last few stops have not been great. But that said, I think that the most important thing is he's going to have to embrace the portal. And he's going to kind of have to be he can't be the same coach that the Missouri State had in the early 2010s. He's going to have to be different, but at least he comes in with the history of being able to win in Springfield. And that is a fan base who's desperate for winning. And hopefully, you know, he can put together a good enough roster where he can, here in the next couple of years, get a competitive product back on the floor in Springfield and get a little bit more momentum. Because to me, it's one of the more sleeping giants in this conference where it's a really good opportunity for anyone to be a coach in the Valley.
I think it's a great hire, too. It brings some stability. It's a known name in Missouri State circles. Obviously, success there. I really like this hire. And we'll kind of see how it goes second time around. But ultimately, I think Bears fans, I'd say the reaction has been pretty positive for all intents and purposes, out at least on Twitter, where I monitor things. But all right, we'll go to the second Maroon school that replaced their coach. We'll go to Southern Illinois, where after Brian Mullins's departure from Southern Illinois, the Salukis hired Scott Nagy of Wright State. He's spent 16 years as a head coach, splitting time between South Dakota State and Wright State. At South Dakota State, he had three regular season Summit championships and three NCAA appearances. At Wright State, three regular season championships and two NCAA appearances. You know, obviously, it's well documented my feelings about Brian Mullins or SIU parting ways with Brian Mullins. Ultimately, you know, the AD laid out what he expected out of a new head coach and what he's looking to hire. And ultimately, it came down to head coaching experience and X's and O's. And ultimately, the Salukis got their guy. And I have not met Coach Nagy. I have not talked to Coach Nagy. I've consumed a couple of interviews he's done. But looking forward to seeing the X's and O's play itself out at Southern. It's been something that I would say has been nagging the Salukis in some late game situations. So at the end of the day, the AD, Tim Limmard, laid out what he wanted out of a head coach. And from this Saluki fan's opinion, he got that in Scott Nagy. I think some of my question marks are, recent success at Wright State in the last couple seasons hasn't necessarily probably been at the level that Coach Nagy has wanted. And is he going to embrace the new landscape of NCAA hoops, embracing NIL, embracing the portal? He's definitely that, from what I can tell, old school X's and O's guy. How is that going to translate now in the new landscape? And I think we're going to see that as he brings people around him to hopefully maybe fill some gaps that he's not comfortable in. And we know he can coach him up, but ultimately, can you get out and recruit in this new day and age? That's the only thing that I can find in this hire that is just an unknown for this Saluki fan.
Yeah, so for the non-Saluki fan, I'll say it like this. Considering how the coaching search went and the whole process and how everything went at Southern Illinois, to land with Scott Nagy is not bad. I think he could be a good coach. He's shown success in the past, which is a big plus for me. Someone that's proven that he can win in college basketball, in Division I college basketball, done it two different places. So he's got that checkbox hit. To me, I think it's twofold. And I know that you kind of put it on, does he embrace the new college basketball Vance, which I agree with you. He does need to embrace, you know, the transfer portal, because I think he's an X and O type of coach. He's had success in college basketball, but he's going to have to recruit in the portal. And, you know, I don't know why his seasons, I don't know a ton about how his seasons at Wright State went the last couple of years. But I have to imagine it trending in that direction could have had something to do with the portal. So I hope that he does, but I also think SIU needs to embrace the portal and embrace the NIL situation in college basketball, because, and this goes back to what Tim Leonard had was his comments, the athletic director at Southern Illinois, where, you know, he had the expectations. And I kind of mentioned it, you know, you can't just take a really good basketball coach, which I think Scott Nagy is, and just plug him in at Southern Illinois. It's going to work. I think you have to put the pieces around him to make him successful. So not it just as important as Nagy embracing the transfer portal is Southern Illinois giving him the tools to success. So it could go really well. It could go bad. I honestly, it's kind of a wild card hire. I listened to his press conference and everything. Came off really well to me. And I liked what I heard out of him. But hearing is only half of it. You got to start to see what happens. So I'm slightly bullish on Southern Illinois with this hire, but I don't know, Vance. I'm also not the fan. So I can just kind of take the passion out of it. Is that kind of, are we kind of along the same lines a little bit?
No, I think you nailed it. And I would summarize it as, okay, yes, we definitely need an X and O's coach. We need someone that can come in that's had success in the past, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I'm hearing here, and I 100% agree with it as a fan of, you can set expectations as a boss, but if you're giving them the tools and the ability to meet and exceed those expectations, I think that's to be determined.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, one of the best fan bases in the conference. So I hope that as a fan base and as a community and as a school, everybody kind of embraces this new wave of college basketball, and Southern Illinois kind of finds their way to compete in the new blend of this college basketball. So can't wait to eventually hopefully speak with Coach Nagy, and wish him luck.
Absolutely. And we'll move on to UIC Flames, who moved on from Luke Yaklich right after Arch Madness and hired Rob Eason of formerly UAB, and he has spent time at Stanford. At his 4 years at UAB, Rob Eason had went 76-57, and then he went on to be the associate head coach and offensive coordinator, which is a thing now in college basketball. And he was also the lead recruiter at Stanford. He kind of falls into the Gary Williams, Maryland Terrapins coaching tree. And I would say this is an interesting hire. It's kind of someone out of left field, in my opinion. But from we talk about the new college basketball landscape, this could be one of the closet home run hires when we talk about this 3 to 5 years into the future.
Definitely could be. Is Rob comes in with when it comes to head coaching experience, the 4 years at UAB was kind of a mixed bag. They were just okay. He never really saw the big time success that Andy Kennedy would the year after Eason actually left the head coaching position in 2021, that Clover year where I believe they made the tournament. Pretty sure, but I know they had a really good year that year, and it was right after he had left. But someone who's been around the block a little bit, I think it's definitely a good, could be a risky hire, but it also I think could be a hugely rewarding hire, as you said. Younger guy seems like he's had a lot of energy from the interviews that I've seen so far. It makes me excited for UIC basketball, and it gives me a little bit of hope. I think they'll be getting to the elephant in the room for me is UIC is a hard job. That's going to be a hard job to fix. And if I'm him, I'm trying to like, what I want to do is duplicate what Porter Mosier did at Loyola, where he turned around Loyola from being a bottom feeder in the Valley to eventually being one of the best programs in the Valley before they left. I think that he needs to kind of mirror that the best he can when it comes to, in a 2024, 25 version of college basketball. So in Chicago, there's a ton of talent. When it comes to high school talent in the Chicago and Chicagoland area, it is insane how many talented players there are. I think he just needs to work on finding them. And similar to Coach Nagy, I think he needs the tools to success there. I think the UIC is going to have to give him more tools when it comes to, you know, an NIL war chest type of situation where he can get those really good players in Chicago, because they're out there. He's just going to have to find them. And I think that, you know, it's not a hopeless job by any stretch. I think that you just, he has to be the right person. And hopefully Rob is that right person. And these two podcasters wish him well, because nothing would be better than if UIC can really upgrade themselves and be kind of in that mix of the Missouri Valley Conference.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that about just the volume of talent in Chicago, because, you know, I kind of look at it and, you know, if you're Rob, you're probably not ecstatic to see, you know, Loyola came on strong at the end and got an NIT bid. DePaul has turnover in with Brian Mullins going there. They're having some early success in the portal, essentially picking off everyone from the Missouri Valley right now. But, you know, ultimately, if you're Rob Eason, you kind of hope that maybe some of these teams were down around you, specifically Loyola, and maybe you could win a recruiting battle between them or DePaul. But ultimately, you know, all three of these Chicago teams are kind of on the up and up, you know, including Northwestern. So ultimately, I think these are different. Like, we're talking a little bit of apples and oranges, but I think fundamentally, it's the Chicago landscape's even harder for that reason.
And one more thing about the UIC job is, you know, listen, I'm biased because I really liked Luke personally, Luke Yaklich. I really hope that UIC gives Coach Eason a little bit more time. I hope Rob gets a little bit more time, and the expectations for these first couple of years with him need to be as low as they get, because he really needs to build this, because when we get to the transfer portal, everything that they're losing going into next season, the cupboard's bare. And so you need to, I think, give him an opportunity to build something, build a little bit of momentum and success there. And to me, if you're a UIC fan, expectations at UIC don't need to start until year three. Like, don't have expectations. Just watch your team enjoy the ride that they're going to go on. And we wish them the best, because I hope, you know, like we, Vance, it's way better for the Valley if they're a good program. And, absolutely, you know, they've come in and they've had a couple 11th place finishes. Their talent, I think, has been better than their record has shown. I don't think that that's unfair to say, but I hope that they do get things rolling, and then we kind of have that Chicago team like we had with Loyola that's year in and year out competing for titles.
Yep. And then we'll go to Drake, where Darren DeVries is heading to West Virginia with Tucker. And Drake hired Ben McCollum, a native of Iowa. He spent his time at Northwest Missouri State University in Division II, where he also played, creating a powerhouse there, winning four national championships at the D2 level, most recently in 2022. Could have been four in a row, but ultimately the 2020 COVID year didn't play out. But he has had recent and sustained success there. 394 wins, 91 losses. For those that don't want to pop out a calculator, that's an 81% winning percentage at Northwest Missouri State University. Coach McCollum was, his name has been brought up in three of the coaching vacancies in the Missouri Valley, both SIU, Missouri State, and ultimately when he's hired at Drake. So great hire for Drake. Missouri Valley has a great blueprint of D2 coaches coming in and having success when we get to the next coach here. But I think a great hire for Drake when you think continuity in sustaining success. I think this is going to be the hire that you know, we could come in and Drake, like I say, they're not going to miss a beat, but you're losing the player of the year, the back-to-back player of the year. But I think this is the hire that could sustain what Drake basketball has built over the last decade.
This is as close to a home run as you possibly could have had. Not saying it will be for sure, because nothing's for sure, but this was a tremendous hire. This is the best. This is a great hire. There's a reason other schools in the Missouri Valley Conference even were looking at Coach McCollum and wanted to get his services to come to their school, but ultimately he chose Drake, and I think it's a perfect fit. I think Drake will rally around him. They've shown that they've had some recent success, and I think bringing in a coach who, you know, maybe maybe you hope he has some of that same success as the other D2 coach that came into the Missouri Valley Conference and took the league by storm. But Vance is a great hire. I don't have a ton more to say about it. I'm really excited to see how they are, especially right away. Because I don't know. I think that the first year is going to be kind of a mixed bag. I don't think you can expect anyone in college basketball to just instantly flip a team. I know Darren DeVries did it 6 years ago when he joined Drake, but it's not the same college basketball was then. That said, I do think that of the new coaches, I think that he is probably set up for success quicker than anyone else. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I think if you can come in and have success in year one, it's going to be the Drake job under Coach McCollum.
Yeah. Real quick, before we move on to the next one, the one thing we didn't really mention is Darren DeVries leaving Drake. This is a coach that he had quite a bit of success at Drake. Those who don't remember, when he came in, they weren't very good. And he had 20 win seasons every single year he was at Drake. Vance, just real quick before we kind of turn the page to the last coaching vacancy, what are your thoughts on what Darren DeVries meant to Drake and, you know, the success that they had under him, where he really made Drake kind of that standard job here in the Valley and was really great for those 6 years?
I mean, at the end of the day, Drake's one of the blue bloods of the Missouri Valley in recent years. And I think it's a testament to maybe the fan base wanting to rally behind, Marty Richter, wanting to hire him. And it's a testament to the program and just the legacy that he built, that they wanted more of it. Ultimately, I think this is a great hire, and by no means do I think they should have went that way. But I think it's a testament to what Coach DeVries built there, is that Drake fans wanted to keep it going, or some of the Drake fans wanted to keep it going. So all that to say, I mean, Coach DeVries put Drake, I'm not saying back on the map, because they've been in the Valley forever, but I mean, they are at the top of the Valley and they are the blue blood, and it's a sought after job. I think you said it right. There's a reason that from what I understand, the other schools offered Coach McCollum to come, and he was kind of waiting out for Drake and hoping it came open and he would be called there. So I think that's a testament to Drake and what was built there from Coach DeVries.
Yeah, no. And you brought up Coach Richter, who was on Coach DeVries' staff. And there's a pretty big amount of people on, you know, Twitter and wherever else you were looking, like, that really wanted Coach Richter to be the next head coach of this team. Ultimately, they decided to go with Coach McCollum, which I think is the right decision. I mean, this is the kind of decision which is why Brian Harden's paid what he is. He's the athletic director at Drake. This is what you're paid for, Brian, to make these type of decisions. And you could go with the kind of sentimental choice. Not to say there's anything wrong with Coach Richter as a coach, because obviously he's on DeVries' staff. He's a good coach. But I think that these are the decisions you need to make that differentiate yourself from other teams in the Valley, because Drake has this standard that they've set over the last 6 years, and they want to continue it. And I think that that's a testament to a really good AD and a really good decision making done at Drake. And like I said, Coach DeVries is heading off to West Virginia, and he leaves a decent legacy where he was had a lot of great success here in the Valley. And we'll see what happens with Drake basketball going forward.
Absolutely. And we'll get to our last vacancy that just came open this week. Head coach Josh Schertz heading to St. Louis University. St. Louis rolled out a $2 million a year with a $1 million NIL war chest to lure him away from Indiana State. From what I understand, Indiana State put together a package of, I believe, is $1.2 million a year, and it would have made him the highest paid coach or one of the highest paid coaches in the Missouri Valley Conference. But ultimately, I think this is one that we knew was coming, not where, but when Coach Schertz was going to take another job. And he goes to SLU. SLU has always been one of the top paying A-10 head coaching jobs. And I think it fits nicely into just the Josh Schertz model of the way he coaches and the type of program that he attracts himself to. I know his name was in all of the major openings, whether it be Louisville, FAU, his name was brought up there. But ultimately, I think for SLU, this is a home run hire. But for Indiana State, you know, we don't know who they're going with. I honestly haven't even heard anything from Indiana State, because they don't have a president and or athletic director. So I think it might be some time before we hear who's going to Indiana State, because they have some administrative turmoil they need to get through. Basically they need to hire a president and a athletic director. And from what I understand, they're going to wait for that before they hire a head coach. But ultimately, Josh Schertz leaving the Valley, left Indiana State, or brought Indiana State to relevance, back to relevance. And that's been demonstrated the last 2 years at Indiana State. So Josh Schertz to SLU, headline.
Yeah. And yeah, we will see what happens when it goes forward. I know Coach Graves, Matthew Graves, the interim head coach right now. I wonder if that will turn into a permanent job or how that's going to go. But I think there's a lot that's going to come out of there. It's a crazy situation with Indiana State. So to take you guys back, we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss about the fact that right before the championship game, he kind of sent out a message on Twitter, which is never the best place to try to litigate things in the public eye, about how he hasn't made a decision, blah, 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 all this stuff about, and I'm paraphrasing here, but how he hadn't made a decision. He's still waiting to, you know, coach the game, blah, 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 and then took the job the next day. Here's the thing. We've met Coach Schertz. I don't want to speak for you, Vance, but you can speak for yourself. He's one of the best people we've talked to. One of the most genuinely fun conversations that I've ever had. So to me, if you would, I have no doubt in my mind, his agent behind the scenes was talking with different schools, but if he says he wasn't, I don't know. I don't know if I don't believe him. I mean, he might be telling the truth. He might've just said, set it up for me. We'll talk after the NIT. But I get it. If you're upset and, unhappy in the NSA, I know the other piece that I've heard is that, he kind of gave Indiana State a roadmap of how to keep him based on the success they were having, whether or not to raise the amount of money that they did, for an extension and a raise for him. They got there and he still took the SLU job. I know a lot of people are kind of a little upset about that. I get it, but at the same point, taking the SLU job, it's an upgrade. I mean, it's one of the best paid jobs in the A-10. Coach Schertz was awesome in his time here in the Missouri Valley Conference. He really flipped that roster, made it through some tough times. I mean, what was it, 2 years ago, Vance, during that COVID year, he had to play with seven guys. I mean, he's had some ups and downs at his time, kind of transforming Indiana State into what it became and what kind of run it went on, where, you know, they ultimately fell short of an NCAA tournament bid, but made it all the way to the finals, the NIT. And one of the most fun teams to watch, as we've been doing this podcast, one of the most fun teams to watch week in and week out. So if you're an Indiana State fan out there, I wish I'd give you a hug, because this is no fun. This is the no fun part about college basketball. But ultimately, this was kind of expected. And I think you're right. You're right to be mad and right to be upset. And it's okay. But this too will pass, and hopefully the next head coach at Indiana State has similar success, because it's better for the league when Indiana State's good. Look how much excitement there was this year, Vance.
Absolutely. I mean, it is great. I mean, we experienced it at Hinkle Fieldhouse when there was 9,000-ish Indiana State fans. And at the end of the day, you can be upset about Coach Schertz, but you probably got a lot of fans off the porch and back engaged in Indiana State sports, which is going to be a net positive. If he laid out that blueprint and you raise money, it's not like those donors can take money back. Like it's been, or I mean, maybe they can't, I don't know. But ultimately, there's money now flowing into the program that wasn't 1, 2, 3 years ago. So at the end of the day, he's going to leave you in a better spot. It's not where you want to be, because you want him to be your coach. But at the end of the day, Indiana State's better for the run that Coach Church gave you. So ultimately, I think you got to look back and, yeah, you can have a sour taste in your mouth, but at the end of the day, the program's healthier because of Coach Schertz. You're back on the national conversation. People were talking about Indiana State. People were talking, you know, the Larry Bird teams, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, everything. You know, you guys were on ESPN, and I think you pulled great numbers for the NIT championship and the Final Four. So at the end of the day, this is a net positive here. And all that to say, like, Coach Schertz has been nothing but good to us and gave us time that, you know, we rightfully probably didn't deserve how much time he gave us. And ultimately enjoyed every conversation we'd had with him. So yeah, you know, the sun's going to rise tomorrow. You'll hire a coach sometime, but at the end of the day, you know, there's just some turmoil going on in the front office that probably wasn't the most conducive environment for him to want to come back to. And so, you know, there's other places you can lay blame, but ultimately the program's better for Coach Schertz to be a part of it.
I think that's awesome that you just highlighted that, because I think you're absolutely right. This program is in way better position than it ever needed to be. You're right. This is, Indiana State fans, this is something that I think is good for you guys, that you tasted the success and got the fan base, like you said, Vance, re-energized. And hopefully you don't want to lose that. And it sounds like, you know, being able to raise that kind of money, it shows that, you know, basketball is so important in the state of Indiana. And they want to get back to what they want to be. This is what they want to be, the standard in this conference. So I hope they don't miss on this next coaching hire. I hope that whoever gets the head coaching job continues the success Josh Schertz had there. And we'll have to wait and see what happens. And you know, it's funny you mentioned about the how kind he was with his time, because he always gave us a lot of time whenever we talked to him. The best interview of all time that I've ever done. Vance, you were not on this call. I don't know if you remember this or not. But the best interview that I even said right after it happened, this is nothing about the hiring. So we're just going off a tangent here. But so I interviewed Coach Schertz. Vance was gone. I think you might have been Europe, actually. And I was interviewing Coach Schertz by myself. And it was like an amazing interview. I texted you right away. I was like, oh, my God, just got done talking to Coach Schertz. It was such a blast. His stories were so good. Interview got deleted the next day. And it didn't get uploaded. And so there's somewhere out there in the internet, a lost interview between myself and Coach Schertz exists out there. And it is one of the best interviews ever. I didn't say anything to him. We talked to him media day the next time. And he kind of brought up the fact that we had talked. And I was like, I don't want to say anything to you because that interview didn't drop and you wasted about an hour of your time. But no, that's just a little fun story about Coach Schertz. But he was always super cool to us. Every time we talked to him, he enjoyed his time, and we enjoyed talking to him as well. So we'll see what he does at St. Louis. I have no doubt in my mind he's going to be incredibly successful wherever he goes.
Yep, and schedule Missouri Valley Conference teams. That's the most important. I think he had a quote today, or I saw it somewhere, so I'm sorry I'm not giving credit to the beat reporter who said it. But ultimately he said, I'm open to scheduling anyone, except for maybe Indiana State at this time, because we probably need some time for that one to cool down, or something of that. I'm paraphrasing again, but that was a great quote I saw out there. So, and that goes for you too, Coach DeVries. Schedule Missouri Valley Conference teams. I think all of us will happily get on a bus or plane and head out to West Virginia. But let's get in. So we've talked about the coaching side. Let's get into the player side. But you know what? Before we started recording, I told Baker, like, this is just such a weird time. Not necessarily in a good college basketball mood. Baker, and, you know, really to those listening, are we enjoying this? Like, the offseason I dread because of not only is it coaching changes, but the portal. Who's in the portal? Who's not? Like, this landscape of college basketball, is anyone having fun? And I would love to ask coaches that. I would love to ask players that. But, you know, as I tangent a little bit of, okay, so the Coach Cal news is starting to come out that he's going to go potentially from UK to Arkansas within conference. And I know he's getting paid a ton. I know the buyout's ton at UK. I know that there's probably some UK fans that are excited. But put it put yourself in the shoes in the Missouri Valley Conference landscape. What if, I don't know, Josh Schertz went to Bradley or he took the Drake job? How would you feel about that? Like, is this what college basketball is about nowadays, is that coaches are now kind of, you know, the high commodity and they're chasing NIL and they're just going to places that have the NIL and players are now doing the same thing. Last year was the NIL chase. Is it now just, you know, dominoing down to coaches? But, you know, I just kind of rhetorically ask myself, like, is this fun? Is college basketball fun?
Sometimes it's not, Vance. Sometimes it's not. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's just, you know, teams get gutted right now and, you know, losing coaches, losing players like crazy, as we'll talk about here in a second with the transfer portal. But it's definitely a hard time, especially at this level, because as everything is cyclical in college basketball, we're still at that point where the mid-major type schools are trying to figure out their place in the portal and how they're going to be successful. I don't think we're there yet, especially seeing all the players that have left. But
and I don't want this to be like a portal thing. You know, Vance hates the new landscape, hates the portal, all of this. And because I still truly believe in the portal giveth and the portal taketh. And I get that point of view, right? Like, we're going to get people from Power Five that come down. Maybe we're the in-between for some, you know, D2, D3 players that want to, you know, move up. Like, I get that. But just that feeling I get that every offseason comes around that it's like, you know what, I can't wait. I'm a Saluki fan. I can't wait to see A.J. Ferguson play 4 years at Southern Illinois. I'm never going to have that feeling about any player or freshman or anyone that comes to Southern Illinois ever again. You know, like, I'm not going to be able to rally behind one player because it's going to be about how much money do we have to get now in NIL to keep them here. It's just, I don't know. Like, I'm not anti it. It's just, I'm maybe struggling to embrace just the new reality that is. And that's really where my comments around, is this fun, really come out. And it's really just in the off season that I don't look forward to opening up Twitter to see where all these portal people are going. Like, I just don't care. Like, let me know in November and December when they enroll at SIU as an SIU fan, like, who my roster is and how am I going to get buy-in and really just, you know, really want to, you know, rally behind certain student athletes whenever, you know, after 20 some odd games, they might move on. Like, I just don't know how I feel about it. I know it's a mindset shift that's going to have to happen to occur, but just where we are on the calendar, this is probably the lowest I get in the off season.
You know, a listener sent me a message not too long ago about jersey retirements. Is that the end of jersey retirements in college sports?
Ooh, that's a great one.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, I think it'll be few and far between for sure. There won't be very many, especially at our level, because people come, people go. I do think that, to your point, and I don't want to make this all doom and gloom, even though it kind of is. I do think that there's, I don't know if I want to call it legislation or coordination between whether it's the NCAA or whatever college athletics body is going to be here in the next decade. But I do think that there's going to have to be some kind of level set maybe within college sports when it comes to NIL, because it feels like it's still the Wild West and what people are offering. Even just in conference, like I've heard different things about this school's offering this, and well, this school can actually offer this. This school can't offer anything. And like, you hear different stories around, like, it's not even a level playing field in this conference. I think that when we need to get to a point where, whether that's legislation from Washington or what, but get to a point where, not necessarily a level playing field, because it never will be, but at least have more rules and parameters around the transfer portal, around NIL, different things like that. I'm all for players getting paid. I've said that from the start. But I do think for the betterment of college athletics, whether it's any sport, football, basketball, whatever, I think that we do need to have kind of rules around it and more of a standard. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. Like, that's the practical answer that has to happen. But to what detriment, before that actually comes into play, will it be to teams like the Illinois States that you follow, or the SIUs that I follow, or the Evansvilles or the Bradleys? To what detriment are we going to gut mid-majors to get to that point? And by what time? Because, you know, there's a lot of schools that are just not in the financial landscape that they can do that. And, you know, in a time where you're talking about what sports we're going to keep and not keep, you know, it's just one of those of, are we going to get there, and when are we going to get there? Because, you know, it's not a level playing field, and we got to get there, because, you know, for some state schools that are highly dependent on it, you know, it's one of those, we got to get it figured out sooner than later.
And one thing I will say, before we run through all of the transfer portal people, as an optimistic person, seeing the Missouri Valley Conference excitement around each fan base and around each university, whether it's their coaching changes or just being able to raise money in the NIL, and how different schools are kind of doing different things, you know, some more than others, no question about it. But it at least seems like the trajectory is all going up from all of our schools,
yes.
Whether or not at the same pace, probably not, but at least they're all going up. And as a Valley fan and someone who loves this conference, seeing the health of this conference in the next decade or whatever it's going to be, that's at least at least kind of the optimistic side of it. It's there's a lot of conferences out there. I would say everybody outside of about the top 12 or 13 conferences. I mean, NILs are basically nothing. Like, these kids aren't getting anything. So to be on the right side of that, at least, I think that'll make you competitive and more sustainable as a conference and with your programs. So at least if you're a Valley fan, you can like that part of it. Like, it just like what we said about Indiana State, they pulled together a lot of money because they saw the success and they want to keep having it. You know, you've got a place like Evansville who is starting to see some success under Coach Ragland. I think that the excitement within that program has never been higher in years, fans. And it goes on with every program in the league. So there's at least that going for us, but, time to rip the Band-Aid off, fans, because we will talk some portal. All right, Valley fans, we are going to jump into the departures and the new transfers that are coming into the league. So far, it's Monday, April the 8th, so this is the date that we're going off of. This is as up-to-date of a list as I can put together. So let's get started. Vance, we're going to start with my Illinois State Redbirds. They have three different players who are all entering the transfer portal, all of which have 1 year of eligibility. Two of those players, Sissoko, I'm not sure what he's going to end up doing, but two players who are definitely impact players for Illinois State, Darius Burford, Miles Foster, both entering the portal. Definitely a gut punch for as a Redbird fan to lose Miles Foster. I know that they tried really hard to keep him. And I think, you know, even with Darius Burford, while he was injured a lot, you never want to see a really good player walk out your door because it's a lot harder to it's easier to just have the guy rather than have to replace him. So I'm definitely gutted though for Miles Foster leaving, but it does open up three spots for the transfer portal on the other side for my Redbirds. Vance, do you have any thoughts on Illinois State?
No, I'm with you on that one in the sense of Miles Foster is who I was hoping you'd target to retain, but I think it's encouraging someone like Johnny Kinzinger sticking around, not hitting the portal after, you know, a freshman year of success, probably garnered some attention outside of the Missouri Valley, and excited to see you retain more. And, you know, maybe in this day and age, having three spots is not a bad place to be right now.
No, it's not a bad spot. I think with, I know that they're targeting another big guy or two for the team, as well as a shooter, which is definitely something that sounds like Illinois State wants to address sooner rather than later. So, but you brought up Johnny Kinzinger. Having him come back is huge. So things not looking too terrible for my Redbirds in comparison to the rest of the league. Don't love losing a good player like Foster, but it could be a lot worse, as we'll get to with Belmont. If you were going to look at the Belmont roster this year, Vance, and you were going to look at who you didn't want to lose, I'd say that the top three names on that list were Malik Dia, Jacoby Gillespie, and Kay Tyson, which are all 2 years left of eligibility and are all in the portal. Jacoby Gillespie actually has recently committed to go to Maryland in the portal, but losing Dia, Gillespie, and Kay Tyson, Vance, it almost feels like you got to start over if you're Belmont.
You do, and some of the names that are linked with Cade Tyson and Malik Dia, I mean, we're talking blue bloods, specifically for Cade Tyson, that are suitors for him. Yeah, I don't know. I'm gutted for Casey Alexander. I know this is not something he wanted. Obviously, this is just the landscape of college basketball, but I thought he had something special at Belmont, that Belmont would be, you know, at the top of the Valley next year, you know, as we're talking preseason favorites, could be, you know, at the top there with bringing those three back. So gutted for Coach Alexander. It's the reality of college basketball. I was kind of surprised with how quickly they hit the portal. You know, never want to throw out the tampering word, but I was very surprised with how quickly they hit the portal.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what he does. Really bummed for him because, like you said, they would have been the favorite. If they returned everybody, they were going to be the favorite going into next year. But unfortunately, they won't. But on the fortunate side, he has replaced a couple of those players, Brody Peebles and Carter Witt. Peebles is coming over from Liberty. Witt is coming over from Furman. Both have one-year eligibility. Peebles is 6'2 guard, 10.7 points per game at Liberty. Witt coming over 6'4 guard, 7.9 points per game. So there's a lot of scoring that they're going to have to replace with those three guys leaving, but a couple of nice players coming in, a couple of good guards for Belmont, and we'll see what they can do as they get into Casey's system. The next team that we're going to go down to is the Drake Bulldogs. Vance, They lost it all. They lost their head coach, and they also lost the best player in the league, Tucker DeVries, who was heading to West Virginia. He's kind of the standout player. I think he was like the third ranked player on the entire transfer portal this year, which is pretty crazy, but lost a lot of really good players. Let's see here. Kevin Overton, Connor Enright, Colby Garland, Atten Wright, Rayshon Hall, Ethan Roberts. Tucker DeVries was leaving no matter what, so I'm not even going to talk about him. He's going to go to West Virginia and play well. We know that. I think Overton, Enright, Garland, and Wright are all guys that you maybe would have hoped to retain one or two of those guys to start the McCollum system. Maybe you still will. I know there's still rumors out there because some of them have quite a bit of eligibility. But ultimately, that's a really good core of players from Drake that are in the transfer portal. And just, I mean, there's power schools out there, Vance, that are probably licking their chops at some of these kids. So especially a guy like Kevin Overton, who has three more years of eligibility, and think about what his ceiling is going to be out there. So, Vance, any thoughts on Drake with a new head coach? Quite a bit of roster turnover here.
Yeah, and, you know, we said that Coach McCollum, you know, probably could have the most success in year one, but I think it's because we saw it with Coach Schertz coming over. So, yeah, the cupboard's bare right now at Drake, but I think that it's still a very unattractive place to come and, you know, be successful in the transfer portal and maybe bring some of his D2 players with him, which we saw success in that at Indiana State. So, you know, yes, there's a lot of volume in the portal, but what you're bringing in, I could see could really replenish it quickly.
Yeah, maybe you hope to retain maybe at least one of the guards back, which would be great for him. Everybody loves Drake and seems like it's a great place to be. So hopefully they can fix that roster up real quick. We'll move on to Indiana State. Really not a lot to say about them as the Schertz news is so fresh. Only Mason Miller has entered the portal with 1 year more of eligibility. Who else is going to enter the portal? Who knows? All five starters for Indiana State could go in the portal and play somewhere else next year, which I think is probably more likely. If for some reason they can find a way to bring everybody back, they're going to be the best team in the league. Vance, I don't see it. I don't see any of them staying. We could speculate maybe one would stay, but ultimately I think that this is going to be a complete rebuild for whoever is the next head coach in Indiana State.
Agreed. Yeah, hopefully they can keep it rolling. That's all I got for Indiana State.
Yeah. I don't think it's a 0% chance that everybody stays, but I think it's less than 1%.
Agreed.
let's put it like that. We'll move over to Evansville. Gosh, I was so bummed when I saw these two names hit the portal, Chuck Bailey and Evan Hummerkaus both entering the portal. Bailey's got 3 years left, one of the better freshmen in the league. Hummerkaus kind of took the league by storm. Had a little bit of injury unluck during the season, but a really strong player. He's going to have a lot of places people to look at. I was hoping that they would be able to keep both of these guys, or at least one of them, because Vance, they're building something there at Evansville. And I really liked these guys on Coach Ray Eklund's team.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll get to another team in Indiana that retained very well, but I was really, really, really hoping, like you, to not see Hummerkaus hit the portal just because of how much we enjoy Coach Ragland, and it's well documented here that I agree, and I'm just going to basically co-sign everything you said. He's building something, and I thought that by retaining Hummerkaus would have been just another notch in the belt of we were kind of right in that assumption. I still think we very much are, but Hummerkaus would have been kind of the cherry on top.
And he's got quite a few guys coming back, which he's not totally out of luck. This is kind of more similar to an Illinois State, where you're losing a couple of those marquee players. Chuck Bailey leaving as a freshman, that's the one that stings a little bit more. But by the way, side note, Blaise Beauchamp still in the transfer portal. So those of you who do or don't remember Blaise Beauchamp, still in the transfer portal. So kind of surprised to see that. They did get an incoming player coming in from Eastern Kentucky. It's Payshawn Homer. He's got 2 years left of eligibility. He's a 6'1 guard, 7.8 points per game at Eastern Kentucky. Kind of that smaller guard that, you know, Evansville's had a lot of good success in the past with smaller guards. Shamar Givens comes to mind right away as a guy who was smaller, but was able to fill it up pretty well for them. So I don't know a ton about Comer, but it's good to see that it's not just outgoing at Evansville. We do have an incoming. So that's a good one to look out for. Let's go on to UIC, Vance. Losing Coach Yaklich meant that there was going to be a lot of roster turnover. Ethan Pickett, Stephen Clay, Cam Fens, CJ Jones, Andrew King, Toby Okoni, Isaiah Rivera, and Griffin Yaklich all entering the transfer portal for UIC. Isaiah Rivera actually recently has just announced that he's going to DePaul, where Coach Brian Mullins is going there as assistant coach, along with other players here in the Missouri Valley Conference, as we'll get to, as DePaul is becoming kind of a hotbed for Valley players. But Vance, today we're going to lose a lot of guys. You would hope that they were to retain guys, but ultimately in this world of college basketball, you're not going to. So do you have any thoughts about the outgoing guys from UIC?
No thoughts. Rivera going to DePaul. I wonder what Coach Mullen said is, hey, you torched us three times we played. You know, come play for me at DePaul. And then Toby Okoni, probably the one that I'm the most curious where he lands, because I think his ceiling is very high. He's got a 1 year of eligibility. I think he could be a nice little piece somewhere at a power five.
I think CJ Jones also with 2 years of eligibility. A lot of teams, I think, are going to look at him as well. A couple incoming players for Isan. He's got Amon Henderson coming over from Niagara and Joshua Reeves coming over from Mount St. Mary's. Henderson has 3 more years of eligibility. He's even smaller than Comer at Evansville. He's 5'9", 11.2 points per game. So a really small guard coming in, Ahmad Henderson. And then Joshua Reeves, he's got 2 more years of eligibility. He's a 6'4 guard, 8.8 points per game. So as you see with some of these teams that are losing quite a few players, really nice that UIC is hitting the portal hard and they're starting to get a few players coming back in. So as Coach Isan's building up that roster, so – I think the things are looking okay for UIC, as okay as they can, Vance. Next one here, Valparaiso, Vance, and I think that this is one that if you're a Valparaiso fan, you've got to be ecstatic right now with the portal, because you haven't lost anybody yet. Because it is early and you could lose somebody, but as of right now, your two best players have come announced, Cooper Schweiger and Isaiah Stafford have both announced that they're coming back. And so that must feel really good if you're a Valpo fan to know that two-man core is coming back to play with you. And then you've also got an incoming player in Devon Ellis, who a lot of people really like, 6'6" guard, a little bit bigger guard from Maryland East Shore, 11.6 points per game. I think he can step in and be an immediate impact player for Valparaiso. Vance, what are your thoughts on the Beacons having a really pretty good portal?
Validation that Roger Powell Jr. was the right hire. No one has left. You know, it was a running joke and for Valpo, for us, even in this, the podcast with Coach Lodic and it was a revolving door. It was a new starting five every year. This is validation in Coach Powell. In Powell we trust.
No doubt about it. I think that they're going to be in the mix this next year. Missouri State, also Konzo Martin, new head coach, placing Dana Ford there. Quite a bit of guys hitting the portal. NJ Benson, the kind of prize of the ball there. He's actually heading to DePaul as well. So going to be a teammate with Isaiah Rivera. He's got 2 more years left. Cray Bay, a guy that we didn't really see much of because I think of injuries kind of hampered him. Cesar Edwards, Cannon Gibson, Alston Mason, Damian Mayo, and Chance Moore all entering the portal. Similar to the other teams, Vance, I think it's just the expectations were strong for these guys. Really curious where Alston Mason ends up. I think he had a really good year and stepped up his game enough that he's going to get a lot of looks. But any thoughts around the Bears?
No, I think just kind of with coaching turnover, this was coming, and we'll get to the next one.
No doubt about it. And the next one is your Southern Illinois Salukis, who also replaced placing Coach Brian Mullins with Coach Nagy. Kenner Davis, Troy D'Amico, Chris Cross, Scotty Abube, A.J. Ferguson, Jared Hensley, Cade Hornecker, Trey Miller, Clarence Rupert, all entering the portal. Troy D'Amico is actually following his head coach, going to DePaul to play with Isaiah Rivera and N.J. Benson. So it'll be interesting to see what happens up there in Chicago with them. But, Vance, you're going to have a very new-look Salukis team coming in next year. The one guy I think that – I guess there's two guys that I was really disappointed to see that are leaving. And I don't know your thoughts are. Kenner Davis, I know, is going to come to mind for people, but the two that I really was disappointed in, I really wanted to see Scotty Abube and A.J. Ferguson come back. I liked what A.J. Ferguson did, especially toward the end of the year. I think that he got better as the year went on, and it was very evident that he was going to be one of your best players going forward, and unfortunately he's not coming back. So do you have any thoughts on the departures at Southern Illinois?
Yeah, I don't think it's 100% a no chance they come back. Just for those that aren't following coaching changes, we did retain Jarence Howard at Southern Illinois, so he is going to stay on Coach Nagy's staff. So you don't really know what the relationships are, but you know, hey, you may get your wish that Abube and Ferguson stay, but at this point, they're in the portal. From what I understand and what I'm hearing, I do think some of these players will still be in maroon. Next year, wouldn't be surprised if Kenner Davis, you know, goes to a SLU. I wouldn't be surprised if Coach Schertz, you know, gives him a call, being from the St. Louis area. And also, you might see him at Mizzou. Mizzou has a great recruiting class coming in, but those 3 years of eligibility and the amount of PT he got this year is going to be a hot commodity in the portal.
No question. You brought up a great point. Just because they're in the portal doesn't mean they can't come back. So I think that that's one thing to keep in mind with some of the guys that enter the transfer portal. They may be returning to their school. But one team that hasn't had a lot of dealings with the portal in the past with people departing their school is Northern Iowa. This year, the portal actually came in and hit them pretty substantially, losing their best player, Nate Heisey, to Iowa State. Also in the portal currently, Michael Duox, Cole Henry, Pixari, I've never said his name correctly, so I apologize to him. And then Landon Wolf as well is in the portal. Wolf was one of those guys that I was kind of surprised entered. A good young guard that he could really shoot the basketball. And then Michael Duox, who had what I would call a really good freshman year and a kind of a sophomore slump type of year. So I'm kind of curious him entering the portal. I wonder if he comes back, because that was one that he didn't exactly increase his stock any. If that makes sense. And so, do you have any thoughts around the Northern Iowa departures? Obviously, Heisey comes to the top of the list.
Absolutely. And I think this one, I'll go back to my old man yells at cloud rant that I went on earlier, but this would be the question that I would ask. If there's one coach I could ask, are you having fun? It'd be Ben Jacobson right now. Cause actually this is, I'm not gonna say the first time, you know, he's been bit by the portal bug, but you know, Heisey, Duox, Wolf, Cole Henry, you know, he's getting stung pretty decently this year. And so it's one of those. Ben Jacobson is the dean of the Valley. He builds 4-year programs. This one hurts probably a little bit more, just for the future Panthers.
For the future Panthers, though, Max Weisbrod is coming in from Northern Michigan, one of the better D2 prospects out there. He's got 2 more years eligibility, 17.9 points per game, a 6'4 guard. He is going to be really fun to watch as we go forward here. A lot of people really like this kid coming in, and I think he's someone who can contribute right away, which a lot of D2 players, that's one thing about the portal that I've noticed is it's not as much the JUCO route, it's more the D2 route that are really impacting their teams right away. So we'll get to another D2 player coming up here with the next team, but first let's talk about Bradley's departures. Gonar Biliou and Kyle Thomas both leaving, but I think the one that kind of stands out here is Connor Hickman leaving with 1 more year eligibility, leaving Bradley. Doesn't have a home yet, but all accounts are that he's not going to come back. Vance, Bradley's losing one of their best guards.
They are. I wouldn't be shocked if he came back. I think I was just kind of surprised that he stayed in the portal whenever Darius Hanna and Duke Dean all, I would say, relatively quickly. I know Hanna was a week or so after Duke Dean, but they came back. You know, I just thought that was kind of a threesome that Loken played together. Maybe Connor's chasing some money. I don't really know how this, you know, I can't think of a mindset of a, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old college student. But this is one that I would say kind of surprising with just the way Wardle builds his programs and just the type of player Connor Hickman was lend itself to the Wardle program and Bradley. So, you know, go do you, but somewhat of a surprise.
Yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't feel like a Bradley move, but already hit the ground running. Connor Dillon coming over from Winona State with 1 year left, 6'2 guard, 21 points per game. He's actually a kid who's local to the Peoria area, went to Peoria Notre Dame High School, coming back to Bradley for that final season for him. He seems like he's going to be an impact player immediately, Vance. I think they're going to rely on him as a really good shooter out there and guy who can score the basketball. So, losing Connor Hickman is a stinging problem, but getting a kid like Dylan right away is a huge get for Bradley. We move on to Murray State, final team here on the list. They've got three players in the portal right now: Brian Moore Jr., Sam Murray, and Malik Abelgawad, also in the portal. Brian Moore Jr., his minutes were kind of sporadic toward the end of the year, so I'm not exactly surprised about this one, but they've got quite a bit to replace here with Murray State, especially losing Rob Perry as he's no longer has any more eligibility. So Vance, your thoughts on Abelgawad, Moore, and Murray entering the portal?
Volume is lower than last year. Obviously, Coach Prohm trying to build something there, but this is one that I thought was on turnover watch. They could have significant turnover. Glad to see, they're not losing their starting five.
The two guys that I was really excited that are coming back is Nick Ellington and Jacoby Wood. Those guys have not entered the portal. Losing Quincy Anderson, losing Rob Perry due to no more eligibility. That stinks. But they got a couple guys who are going to kind of be those cogs for them in the middle to at least be able to build around. So I don't think Murray State has had the most catastrophe filled offseason yet. So that has been the transfer portal, Vance, and let's get into the final segment and get a close to this.
All right, Valley fans, let's get into the questions that you submitted on X at March Arch Pod and at March Arch Baker. Baker, why don't you start us off with the first one here?
Yeah, we'll start off here with a quick question here. How many of the former Drake players end up at West Virginia? How many former trees end up at SLU? Vance, off top of your head, what do you think?
I'm going to say two each. Yeah, definitely Tucker at West Virginia, and I think Avila goes to St. Louis. But I'd say from a volume perspective, I think it's more likely that more Sycamores go to SLU than more Bulldogs go to West Virginia.
All right. You asked me this question, this or that, but opinion on all the coaching hires. Who do you think is going to have the most success going into year one? Do you think it's also Ben McCollum?
I do think it's Ben McCollum.
Awesome. Who do you think is going to have the toughest run to start off?
I'm going to go with Eason at UIC. Just because I don't want to pick Scott Nagy at SIU because I'm an SIU fan. Just more of Chicago landscape's hard. He's relatively an unknown quantity when it comes to coaching. But with that, I think he's got one of the higher ceilings of the coaching hires.
Okay, Matt, he says he is concerned with the overall strength in the Missouri Valley Conference with so many coaches, player exodus from the schools like Belmont and Evansville. Vance, are you concerned about the overall health of the league, as in the short term? We were the 9th ranked league kind of in there. Do you think we take a step back here in the next year?
Absolutely. And we've talked about this on the side. We're going to be nowhere near the top 10. Like, I'm saying we're going to drop maybe to like 12, 13, 14, potentially next season. It's been a little bit of a pessimistic episode, but I think it's a reality that we might have to live.
No question. Is there any of the players that I mentioned that are coming into the Valley so far, whether it's freshmen, you can name somebody that I haven't talked about, or any of the new transfers that are coming in? I think I'll kick it off with you. I think Connor Dillon and Max Weisbrod are the two that stand out to me, the two D2 players going to Northern Iowa and Bradley respectively. Vance, is there any player that you're really excited about, or you're not even there yet?
I'm not even near there. Talk to me late summer, early fall. I said it earlier in the episode, when we have a roster, please come tell me, because I'm not gonna spend the heartburn trying to follow rosters. That's just where I'm at. Maybe it's a cop out. You can call my Valley fan card, but it's annoying. Full transparency. So, love the question. I wish I could give you an answer, but not there.
That's fair. Name who will win the MVC Coach of the Year, and you can't say Wardle or Jacobson for next season.
Roger Powell Jr.
I think that's the right answer. Let's see here. The a lot of people asking about the new coaching hires, which we talked about. If you had the choice of bringing back the Mountain West Missouri Valley Conference Challenge or the Bracket Busters, which one would you choose?
Bracket Busters, and for this reason, I mean, it might end up just being a Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge, but Bracket Busters is you had a little bit more control over which teams got selected for the higher rated games. And so I like that aspect of it. Whereas still in the Mountain West MVC Challenge, I would say we could still game it a little bit. That doesn't hurt either team. It was Bracket Busters was, hey, if you lose that, you might see yourself on the other side of the bubble. Whereas I could see the Mountain West MVC not help the bubble teams, if that makes sense.
It does. I would go with the Mountain West just because if they're getting six teams in the NCAA tournament, I would play that league. As long as that's going to continue, and I know it's going to continue, I'd rather get that challenge going. That said, I don't think that goes forever. That's not going to be the same thing every year. So, all right. Another question is from Tony. Who's going to be first team all conference next year, Vance? Do you want to take a stab at this one?
Duke Dean will be in the first team.
All right, I'm gonna give you five. I'm gonna give you five. Duke Dean, Titan Anderson, Cooper Schwieger, Isaiah Stafford, and Johnny Kinzinger.
Maybe for the listeners, and give the guys, teams for each of those guys.
Yeah, Duke Dean at Bradley, Titan Anderson, you and I, Cooper Schwieger, and Isaiah Stafford, both of Valpo, and Johnny Kinzinger for my Redbirds. A couple guys that I didn't mention: Yancey Toomey, Bowen Bourne, Toby Wood, Darius Hanna were the other guys that I mentioned. I don't know. It's going to be pretty transfer heavy. The three teams next year. The last spot I was between Bowen Bourne and Kinzinger, and at the last eight or nine games of the regular season, Kinzinger was a much better player. So I went with him over Bourne because Bourne kind of took a step back this past year. So, but I have no doubt in my mind Bowen Bourne's making first team all conference.
I like it.
Vance, we are going to close things out here with my final power rankings. And these power rankings are going to be my prediction of where these teams are going to fall going into next season. This is my way, 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 way too early prediction of next year. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, we're going to start off with number one, the team that my way, way too early prediction. Don't hold me to this, but I would say the team that I'm predicting to win the league will be Bradley. Bradley at number one and Northern Iowa at number two. I think it's a tight race as of looking at what the rosters could or might look like next year. I think those are your two top teams. The next couple teams that I'm going to go with in this order, Illinois State, Valparaiso, and Drake are my 3 through 5 in that order. You can mix them up. Drake's losing a lot, but I have that much faith in Ben McCollum, and with the league gutted as much as it has been, I like what he's going to bring to the table. And Illinois State and Valparaiso are two of the teams that trajectory are going up with the guys that they've kept, especially the youth that they kept. So I think things are looking okay there. Next up, this is the next three teams. Who the heck knows what they're going to look like when the season starts? At number six, Murray State; number seven, Evansville; and number eight, Belmont. Belmont's only on this list because I really like Casey Alexander, and I think he's shown he's successful anytime he's done the job, and I think he'll be able to get some talent to Nashville. But he's got a really big uphill climb. Murray State have a couple guys. Evansville both have a couple guys that could be okay. And then finally, in my last category, it is the rebuilding category. Starting off with at number nine, Southern Illinois; number 10, Missouri State; number 11, Indiana State; and number 12, UIC. Indiana State, obviously, if they kept everybody, they're going to win the league, but they're probably not, and I assume they're going to be number 11. So, Vance, do you have any thoughts about this list?
No, I love the buckets that you did. You know, it's not really tiers anymore. It's just where they're at in the state of their program, so I like that breakout. No feedback on the way too early power rankings, but I'm with you just at the top. I think it's Bradley at the top.
Yeah, and to put a bow on this season, Vance, I just kind of looking back on things, because I know we're not going to record for another 3 months, and just kind of my final thoughts, this has been one of the more entertaining seasons we've had in years, Vance. It was a battle between those two top teams, Indiana State back and forth with Drake this year. One won the regular season, one won the conference tournament title. It would have been nice to get an extra team, but being in the mix for an at-large all year, was at least fun and it kept you really interested, especially even in, you know, we had those non-conference games and all these other games within the regular season mattered that much more. Our metrics went way up, so it was fun to watch the league have so much success. But Vance, I'm going to look back at this year fondly. I'm sure you will. I mean, Southern Illinois exceeded all expectations, so I'm sure as a Saluki fan, it was so entertaining to watch Xavier Johnson.
Absolutely. I mean, leading the nation at one point and scoring, it was a great year as a Missouri Valley Conference fan for all the reasons you said. Two-bid Valley was alive and well up until the last day. And, you know, if this wasn't one of the is it strongest or softest bubbles? I forgot which way we were going on that one, but it was just one of the weirdest bubble years ever. And we didn't get two teams in the NCAA tournament. You know, I went to 9 of 10 Arch Madness games. It was just a, or sorry, 11 of, how many are there? There's 11
games. 11 games.
Yeah. 10 and 11. Jeez. 10 of 11 Arch Madness games. It was, I think it was a great year all around. One that just re-solidifies how much I love this league. I think you said it earlier in the podcast, and I want to reiterate it. I think the Valley fan bases really came together and rooted together. I'd say just as a whole, the Valley was stronger from each individual fan base. And that's what makes this fun. And it continues to make this fun and why we do this podcast. So thank you to all the listeners. Thank you to all of the Valley teams who let us interview your coaches. If you're one of the voices of your teams, thank you for coming on our podcast. All of our guests, thank you. This was a tremendous Missouri Valley Conference season and it's bright. You know, I know this, I've been a little bit pessimistic in this season, but you know what? November, December are going to roll around. We're going to start previewing teams and I'm going to get that excitement and that spark all over again. This is going to be a change management summer for all of us as we welcome our new coaches to lead our teams. And we're going to welcome some new roster players as well. But as always, a great Missouri Valley Conference year in this 2023-2024 season. If you want to interact with us in the offseason, we will be active on X at March Arch Pod. If you want to interact with Vance at March Arch Baker, if you want to interact on X. And as always, go Valley.
Start talking about the Valley. Why not?